With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's Tuesday, the 22nd of November, 2022. It's episode 13 of the season, so things have been winged together. So I'm just a bit touchy about how this is going to go. But my name is Patrick Smith. We're live on YouTube, Facebook, and on Twitter. You can also download us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor FM. Ask your Alexa device to play it. Or you get on a live of your normal podcast providers. On this week's show, split rewards in South Yorkshire as Sheffield and Belfast took the spoils. But there's a lot to consider. We'll get to those games. Lewis Hook is back with the Belfast Giants, and he'll be joining us later for a chat. There's a lot of news to talk about that Joel will take us through later. And it's Friendship 4 weekend. We'll have interviews with captains and coaches alike as we look forward to the big NCAA weekend at the SSE Arena come Friday and Saturday. And then the road trip for the Belfast Giants continues with Guildford and Coventry up next. Mr. Midgemsey, you doing all right?
Good nabbing, Patrick. I'm all right, thank you, mate. I'm very well, thanks. Tired, but I've got some high caffeine alert to keep me going through the podcast.
It's probably
kick in about 11:30 tonight. I'll be sitting like a dog at 1:30.
that seems about right.
Joel got a haircut for the Friendship for us. He's getting chirped here already about that.
How are you doing, Joel? It's just right across there.
Yeah, going to get it finished. Going to get that finished tomorrow, are you?
Nice. I thought I would celebrate the World Cup.
Did Danielle put a bowl in your head?
Could I ever? Thought I would celebrate the World Cup by getting a wish.com Phil Foden haircut. Davey, you've been out of Northern Ireland too long, mate, because if a man needs to perk himself up, there's only one choice, and that is a ten of boost. You've been away too long, mate. We need to maybe export it. I don't know if they do it over there, but we need to send
it. I would say, I think it's 3 for a quid in B&M, isn't it? Something like that. 4 for, maybe 6 for a quid. I'm not sure.
You boys are on one, like boosts and high caffeine stuff. Goodness me.
What are you on, Patrick? What are you on yourself?
San Miguel, mate. One of those days.
Kind of sad.
I finally got a car back. Do you remember I told you my car broke down last week? Got back today.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Took a week and a big chunk out of my savings. But it's
there. Are we on?
We are live. Yeah, we are live. Yeah.
There's too much to be talking about, boys.
There is. Let's crack on. The Belfast Giants travel to South Yorkshire to take on the Sheffield Steelers. And we'll start with the game that took place on Saturday evening, and I'll bring up the statistics. Unfortunately for that, in that game, the Belfast Giants were subject to a 2-1 defeat. This comes up. Petulé and Newman for the Sheffield Steelers, Steve Arie for the Belfast Giants. In nets, Jackson Whistle, 23 shots against, 2 goals against. The other side, Matt Greenfield, 21 shots against, 1 goal against. Liam Sewell and Andrew Miller were your referees. I want to get to them in a bit. Davey, we'll start with this game. Obviously, we'll get to the other game in a minute. But in this game, I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a physical edge of the seat game, but there's just so much to it.
Good game of hockey against probably the two best teams that I've seen so far this season. Certainly 5-on-5. I think that if this game had went to overtime and both teams had taken a point and then fought for the spoils in overtime or penalty shots, I think that might have been a fair reflection on the game. I think in terms of chances, real grade A chances and the play. For me, I think the Giants probably just ever so slightly is a good goaltending from Jackson Whistle on the night. Steelers, for me, Steelers came flying out of the traps and probably took the first 5 minutes of the game, but the scruff of the neck, big chance in the first period for us here on the video there, Colby McCauley breaking away down the right wing, or down the left wing, and you see he does it again the following night, and comes up with a slightly different result. So just here, you know, he has the opportunity, Greenfield just drops the glove ever so slightly, and he sees the opportunity across it, just doesn't make it. You know, for me, the Giants did pretty well, and it's Davey's distorting, and so's his audio. It's maybe Diaz's ears. Do I need to address that, or is that okay for you, Paddy?
You turned down just a little bit, but it's not that bad.
Too loud. Let's see. This is...
You're watching A View from the Bridge.
Up a little bit. My sound, you melter. Yep. Up. Down, up. This is such a professional.
It's good. It's good. And that's it. Go for it, mate.
That's it. So,
it didn't bother me. It obviously bothered Darren, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah. And obviously, well, the goal, a lot of hard work from Gabe Bass down low, and he gets it to Conway, who manages that lovely real 180-degree turn and just puts it out. Steve Ari, you know, fine being a form, finds himself just at the top of the blue paint and puts it away. But it's, I guess the game probably turned on the one call in the late in the game to give them a you know, too many men. Or no, it wasn't a two, it was a high sticking call. Obviously,
high sticking.
They didn't score on the high sticking penalty, sure, or did they? Yeah, here's
the high call against the Giants here, and the home crowd have been
comes around behind and
desperate for anything.
Not sure what happens, and
huh. They are going to finally get a call. There's the high sticking call.
Caught a sniper. Difficult to see what else could have happened there, because he certainly wasn't hit with a stick. Just getting a wee delivery here. Thank you, Ruby.
Yes, Rubes.
But yeah, obviously.
My take on that briefly, Davey, before you get into it, is Joe Petgrave, let's be fair. When these games come along, I try to look into these players and how they go. And I didn't know who he was. To be fair, I don't think his mum knows who he is. There's a Wikipedia before he comes around. But now he'll always be known as that guy who took the dive. It was ridiculous.
That was tough.
Joel?
Tough moment for him. I think top of my list for this weekend, this game and both games, to be fair, Jackson Whistle was absolutely superb. I think Sheffield took it to us in the opening minutes. You could see the urgency that the big team was in town. They wanted to get a result and that they could smell blood in the water because we were a few bodies down. I think Whistle did really well, to, in addition to the Giants defenseman keeping them kind of to the perimeter. Steve Irie continues his hot streak. Do you know what? This is something I said a few weeks ago. Whenever there was a game that we lost, it might have been the Guildford game, and I said it was a game of fine margins where I could actually pinpoint moments where that game could have completely turned on its head. This one for me was similar. You know, if this is the Sheffield Steelers, who are going to be contending for a title at their absolute best, playing in their own barn against a team who are very short on some, you know, top line bodies, you had Derek Angeli rattled the crossbar in the second period. There was that 4-on-1 opportunity that we ended up with. There was a cross-zone pass that just escaped Will Cullen. It was 50 minutes into the game before they took their first lead of this game. And their defensive work in the third was absolutely ramshackle. I just don't know. I don't know if that's the Steelers at their best once we're back to kind of full strength and cooking again. I don't know that there are long-term concerns there, to be honest. On any other night, this could have been a win, despite being short on bodies. Unfortunately, it wasn't. But as we're going to talk about, the weekend was not a loss.
I think that's a fair assessment in that Nottingham the weekend before, we've been a bit short bodied. You know, you could list them: Rainer's been out, Bombers been out, Butcher's been out, Soy's been out, Cooper's been out, Butcher's out, Rupp's out. You know, you have a long, long list there, and you've guys like Sean Norris coming in, Kel Beattie coming in, Max Jurt being in tonight, and all doing a real good job when they've been in. But with the greatest respect, when you've lost top end imports, Mark Cooper, it's been brilliant that Steve Ari's been able to step into his shoes. David Gilbert didn't play an awful lot in the last period on the Saturday night. So yeah, what Joel says stacks up in that we're still competing, and bar, for me, a bad call that puts us on a penalty kill and we're not able to hold it out there. I think we probably see that game through to take it to overtime. You've got to let these teams like sort this out 5-on-5. And, you know, both nights, I think the game-winning goals have been scored on on power plays, and I think both coaches across both nights will be disappointed that it wasn't decided on a 5-on-5 sort of situation.
I was kind of disappointed as well at the standard of refereeing, and this is the first time I think I've had a go at refereeing in quite a while, but I thought the refereeing was shocking in that whole. I don't think it was, again, I don't think it's responsible for the defeat. I do think the call on Petgrave and selling it in the way that they bought it was ridiculous. I think the Giants had more than enough chances to come into this game, but I thought there were quite a few calls in that game that were ridiculous and really just phantom. And we know that there have been a lot of referees who have moved on, and we have new ones coming through, and maybe they're settling into the speed of the Elite League, and so be it. But I'm hoping that that happens quicker, because I didn't feel that the refereeing in that game was the elite standard that we sort of expect.
I think, from my respect, before maybe Joe goes on it, you don't want to be talking about referees on a Tuesday night.
No, you don't.
You wanted to be talking about the players and the highlight reel moments and what happened during the game, and you don't want to be talking about DOPS, giving out why the Department of Player Safety is doing anything on coaches having a go at referees. I do not know that there's bound to be a better way of the league handling that. But that being said, for the coach to get fined for his comments or whatever, I don't know what was said. He was pretty hot, when you're in an emotional game and 10 minutes to go in the game, you get a real massively phantom call against you. There's four officials on the ice, and they had a good old chin wag there about that, and I would say there was more than one of them was saying, I don't think so here, lads, but somebody thinks they've seen something, they've got to go with it. And unfortunately for us, we couldn't just defend that penalty kill, and that's what tipped that game over the edge, and we just didn't have enough in the last few minutes to come back. They're able to, you're having to put your goalie out and panic tactics, Paddy, as the lady once called it. But it's one of those things. It's disappointing that we weren't able to take something out of Saturday night, because I felt that for long periods that game we were well in it.
Joe?
I don't know if you can hear me. My connection is dropping like crazy tonight. It is the 13th show. 13th show. Can you hear me okay right now? Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm here? Yeah, I'm here. I've softened in my stance on stripies as I get older. I used to be a bit more fire and brimstone about them, and I realize that they're only human and that you will have phantom calls. But whenever a game is defined and dominated by poor decision-making, and it actually affects the game itself, and it actually leads to increased tension between the teams, increased physicality between the teams, whenever you become the spotlight and whenever you consistently get it wrong, to get through a game like that and then to sort of make that phantom call when the game is on the line, I find that a bit harder to swallow, because you've had a full three periods there to do your job and it hasn't really come together. Probably the first time this season I'd say that I came away from a game thinking that referee and actually spoiled the game.
Yeah, disappointed. Let's hear Adam Keefe's thoughts from Saturday night.
I thought it was a great game of hockey. Two top teams in this league going at it like we did last year. I thought it was great. Coming into the game, three lines versus four lines, I was a little concerned about us being able to keep pace with Sheffield. I thought our guys did great. Real gutted for them that we didn't get a point at least out of that. I thought it was a great game of hockey up until a phantom high stick call that ultimately ends up being the game winner. That's a soft call in a game like that. There was no high stick on the play, and that's the breaks. That being said, we had our opportunities to either go ahead or tie it up. We didn't take them, and that's the ball game.
You do get a chance for immediate revenge tomorrow. Are there more reinforcements coming to the lineup?
We'll go back to the drawing board here and see what we can get. But I think the guys are a little gutted in there. I thought that they deserved more from tonight. I thought it was a great game of hockey, like I said. And you got to channel that energy for tomorrow.
It was certainly a very tight game, just 40 shots between the two teams.
Yeah, it was a great defensive game. I think there wasn't a whole lot of quality either way. And that's, like I said, that's why it's frustrating to give them a phantom power play there.
It seems like there were times when both coaches and the fans were unhappy with the officials throughout. Is that the most frustrating way to lose a game, when you feel that it's not something that you necessarily deserve?
I would like to see the two teams play that game out 5-on-5. I think we deserve that.
So the highlights of that, Steelers TV. Let's move on to Sunday. The Belfast Giants returned to action in the same arena, and this time we're victorious. A 3-2 victory for your Giants with Kobe McCauley, Scott Conway, and David Goodwin scoring goals in and around, what, 5 minutes apart between all three to go to a 3-0 lead before they were starting to be pegged back. Brandon McNally and Brett Newman was the second of the weekend to make a 3-2. But the Giants in the third period were able to grit it out and take the victory in goals. Jackson Whistle, 34 shots against, 2 goals against. Matthew Greenfield, 12 shots against and 3 goals against. And your referees were, I didn't write down who the referees were. Let's have a look. Let's have a look.
Tom Perring was
one.
Tom Perring and Matt Rose. Tom Perring, Matt Rose. Joel, those 5 minutes, those 3 goals killed the game for Sheffield.
It did. We talked again, sorry to sound like a pirate, but I've talked in recent weeks about scoring key goals at key times. That's what the Belfast Giants did. We're coming into this game without Rayner, without Cooper, without Sam Riop, without Soy, without Butcher. That's incredible. Into a barn with a big crowd. Whenever, you know, that Sheffield atmosphere, that Sheffield barn, they are very, very strong.
Different emotions tonight.
You're okay. It's remarkable to me that they didn't pounce on us and hammer us up and down that place. I thought Sean Norris being drafted in at short notice was absolutely outstanding. Again, I thought Jackson Whistle was tremendous. Kobe McCauley bending physics for that first goal. It was just one of those nights that you could tell that the Belfast Giants were, they had definitely taken their medicine, definitely taken that punch on the chin the night before, but they were not going to be denied on Sunday afternoon. Scoring key goals at key times. So you've got that goal from Kobe McCauley. The air was completely sucked out of that arena whenever Steve Irie played that puck from behind the net out to Conway in the mid slot for 2-0 right at the death in the first period. So again, crucial moment. You've gone in there 2-0 up in a game where Sheffield are thinking, boys, we should be walking this. What's going on? And then you come out in the second period. They've obviously had their ears warmed by Aaron Fox. And what happens? We flip another one in. I didn't think it was Goody at the time, but the goal was given to David Goodwin. Maybe that was wrong, I'm not sure, but
that's right.
Key goals at key times, and then sort of riding it out, getting into the third period. I thought that the defensive display and the resolve to see that game out, especially in the last 10 minutes, was heroic from the Belfast Giants. It's maybe the most I've enjoyed watching us battle this season so far. But I'm not sure that I've seen a game that we deserve to win more, all things considered, and coming in there short benched, but definitely not outgunned.
The magic of that goal from Colby McCauley coming around from behind the goal line and just putting it off the back of Greenfield into the net, Davey, sort of, I don't know, it's obviously intentional, but it's a lovely finish.
Yeah, he's stole the puck in his own defensive end and played a little 1-2 off the half wall and gone free. And I guess when he's going down around the back of the circle there, everyone's defensively looking where this is going to go. Greenfield's covering the low post as you would, and McCauley's just seen a little opportunity there, and he shot high on him, got him on the sort of nameplate, back of helmet, whatever, and it's gone in. Absolutely, you know, at that point, you know, first 15 minutes of the game, I think both nights, 12-5, I think it was, for no goals in the first 15 minutes, which was a good wee punt if anybody took that. Cheers. And but for the Giants to go in leading, you got to look for value. You got to look for value, Joel. You know, that second correct one there, where the whole team gets focused on what Ari's doing around the back of the net and just take their focus off. Just before that, Conway had battled so hard, actually on his knees, still fighting for the puck to recycle the puck, and the Giants kept it and go in behind the net. And then to come out, it is, if you watch here, Joel, it's good he throws it in from the left circle and it takes a little deflection off a Steeler. Steve Ari's got a stick out here in Lawrence and around the blue paint, but it takes deflection, but it is Goody that has the shot.
Fair enough. I saw Ari, I think.
At that point, you know, it's absolutely fantastic, but Jackson Whistle, for me, probably won us this game. In terms of, yes, the forward's done. Yep. Jackson Whistle made some saves he had no right to make the other night, and he really, really stood in his head. Very, very strong weekend to go in there and take 2 man-of-the-match performances. He gave us an opportunity to win. The forward's an opportunity to win both nights. The forward's took the opportunity on Sunday night. Unfortunately, on Saturday night, a bad call robbed us of a point, in my opinion, and who knows what happens in overtime or whatever. But a really strong performance. Gabe Bass, for me, is really, really playing well at the minute. Will Cullen is having to play forward and D at times and doesn't look out of place in either position. you know, Kieran Long's putting his body in there at times instead of Mark Cooper on the power play. Somebody has to go in there. I was looking the other day, actually. I was talking to someone about Marian Hossa having his number retired in Chicago and was thinking about the year that he played in Detroit, and I was just looking up his numbers. He had over 40 goals, and it got me to look at Thomas Holmstrom, who got between 15 and 40 goals every season, all from less than 18 inches. He went and stood in that blue paint and made a career of it. And if you can do that, you will get goals at any level if you've got a team of shooters. And you know, the Belfast Giants have got a lot of guys who can put puck on net from the blue line, and boys get in around that blue paint, they'll score goals. So it was a good performance. Obviously, when they came back to 3-2, it was going to be hard in that third period, especially shortened bodies. That's when the likes of Kelpiti and that's when the likes of Sean Norris eating those minutes through those first two periods allows your guys to play those extra minutes in that third and final period. And I think it was whoever was running the Twitter, assumed Joel on Sunday night, saying, you know, it was a gritty performance, or words to that effect. You know, it was. I think Adam Keefe maybe used it, you know, a bit of a character win. And there's been times this season, I think that's us 11-4, and there's been a few of those 11s that have been character victories.
It's proper grind in that third period to see it out. And I was just looking at the video there, the grief that Kieran Long was getting for missing that empty net at the end of the game. So all that's coming over. But, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You know,
it was on a bad patch of ice, actually. It's not his fault.
It was just took a bottle.
I think I told you on the WhatsApp, it would have given me my greatest moment ever of falling hockey. So, like,
you would have predicted it right down to the minute, that empty netter, wouldn't it?
Not the minute, the second, mate. I said the sheds before the game, it was going to be a greasy 4-2 win and would score an empty netter with 59:47 in the clock. And Longer missed the empty netter at 59:47. I would have just...
Unforgivable.
Missed it, Mac, you know, but it was...
Let's get Kiefer's thoughts at the end of the weekend.
Adam, some different emotions tonight to last night, I'm sure.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, obviously I was happy with our game yesterday. I was happy with our first period in particular tonight. Obviously, you know, built ourselves a nice little lead. Got into a bit of penalty trouble and then gave Sheffield back some life through that. You know, and then we were under pressure. We were fatigue kicked in a little bit. But I particularly like that we buckled down there at the end and found a way to get the job done.
There was a big spell of pressure that the Steelers put you under in the end of the second period, having reduced the gap from 3-3 back to 1. So important that you were still able to go into the third with that lead intact.
Yeah, very important. I mean, Jackson was great. You know, he was very solid in there. He looked confident. Maybe wanted to be his brother. I'm not sure. But, no, I mean, you know, this was a character moment for our group, you know, coming in short bench, and then we lose two more players last night. We bring in young Kelbidi and Sean Norris up from Milton Keynes Lightning, and I thought they were fantastic tonight for us and ate some valuable minutes and contributed. And I thought the whole group was pulling the rope tonight, and that's what we wanted to see in a moment like this.
Talk a little bit more about Jackson Whistle's development, because the Steelers fans saw him here a few years ago. He was a young goalie. He's still a young goalie, but the development is, you know, way ahead of where he was a few years ago.
Yeah, he's very hungry. I think he's more of a professional now. And you know, he's hungry. He wants to win. He wants to help the team win. He wants to be a starter. And you know, he's doing a great job for us right now. And he looks calm. He looks confident in the net. And that, you know, that emulates to the bench, and we feel that.
2 points from this road trip. You've got two more on the road again next weekend, including the league leaders. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and both buildings and both teams are off to a great start to the season. It's going to be another big, tough challenge, and hopefully, you know, we get some rest here and get some healthy bodies back, and then tackle that weekend. You know, these road trips here, we look at them as a chance to become a team, and you know, today was a big step in that direction.
Thank you.
Just to round out this from the weekend, boys, just, you know, obviously taking 2 points from the four in Sheffield. And as you said at the very top of our discussion, Davey, these are the two teams that are probably going to battle an outcome toward the end of the season, or we hope so anyway. Is that a fair reflection of the weekend? Are you glad with what we took away from Sheffield?
I think after Saturday night, you have to be happy to come away with 2 points when you've had the L in the column. But I still feel that we did enough on the first night to take the game, the overtime. And I think we've been, I don't want to go down the line of we've been robbed and get into bad calls and all, but that like coach has said himself, and he's got in trouble for it, you know, a bit of a phantom call puts him on a power play to score the game winning goal on it. It's hard to take that. So I think across the weekend, you know, if you think about our first visit into Sheffield last season, we came away with a 7-1 loss. We had to go back there at the very end of the season, back-to-back games to clinch the championship. And I think you're right, Paddy. Like, these two teams are going to be right up there, as I said, right at the top. Their best team 5-on-5 I've seen this season. Guildford have been pretty good as well, but I think in terms of the games we've played 5-on-5, Steelers have were pretty good across the two nights. So glad to come out. You know, you go there, you want to win your home games, you want to split at very best your away games. So that's pretty good weekend.
Joel, given the status of our team as well and the injuries that we've taken, to come out of there against a team that were more or less full strength, you know, take 2 points away from Sheffield.
I didn't, probably, if I'm being really honest with myself, I didn't go into the weekend expecting an awful lot. I was hoping that we would find a way to battle. I would have probably taken your arm off for a split weekend at the top of the weekend, and losing that extra body and going into Sunday even further short. You know, we talked about pace. We talked about, you know, the Elite League table at this time of year and how it's not much to read into until you get onto the other side of Christmas. And you look at our games in hand, you look at our rough pace, it puts us 3 points off the Guildford Flames in the lead, and we certainly owe them a few. So, it's no great big, disaster.
Big game this weekend, then, Bob. Big game this weekend, you know. We play Guildford, don't we, this weekend? And,
yep, we do.
You know, it's stupid. It's not a pivotal weekend. I mean, you don't have pivotal weekends in November, but we almost, on a weekly basis, you say in this podcast, 2 points in November is as crucial as 2 points in March or April time. And, you know, we do owe Guildford. They've had a couple of W's against us, and we need to rectify that.
Mm-hmm. We do indeed. The highlights from that week, the weekends of games, are all available on YouTube from our friends at Steelers TV, and thanks to them for the footage and for the interviews as well. Right, time for the fan agenda, brought to you by our friends at Belfast Giants TV.
I'm excited.
And it can't have passed anybody that the news came out yesterday at his return. We are delighted to welcome back to A View from the Bridge, Lewis Hirk.
There he is, Luke.
How's it going?
Yes, mate.
How's it going? LA Dodgers hat. We had a Boston Red Sox hat last week. It's an LA Dodgers hat this week.
No comment
from Joel. So, Hirky, welcome back. How does this come about?
I think obviously, like I went to Austria to obviously see Europe a little bit and experience a different style of hockey, and then you know, it took a little time getting used to and adapting, you know, especially being in Belfast for 3 years, you know, I wasn't used to like something new for so long. And then, so that took a while, and then, you know, started to kind of adapt nicely. And then the last month I was like really, really enjoying it there in Austria. But it was actually to do with my girlfriend's visa. She couldn't get a visa over, and it was a little issue with the team. Obviously they kind of said that she could get the visa before I signed. And then the last like couple weeks they were backtracking a little bit, so you know, it just didn't work out. We couldn't kind of come to an agreement, and obviously I didn't really want to be in Austria away from her for the next 5 months. And then obviously been speaking to Kiefer and Steve and just the boys, keeping in touch throughout the season anyway. So I think when that all unraveled, it was obviously an easy decision to pick up the phone and see if there was a spot back in Belfast for me. So
statistically and hockey wise, it seems that you were right at home there. You were firing them in for fun.
Yeah, like I said, the first month for 6 weeks, it was, you know, I was trying to adapt to it, and you know, it was, you know, some games were, I was struggling a little bit, but then yeah, especially the last maybe 10 games, I really, you know, found my feet, and was finding the back of the net, making nice plays, and like, really enjoying my time there. So it's kind of a shame that it stopped at that period of time, but also on the flip side, I'm super excited to be back in Belfast. So,
Lewis, I assume you've been watching in on Giants Live TV anyway at how the boys have been going. You think it's going to be easy enough to slot straight back in again?
I hope so. Obviously, that's the plan. But like I just heard you say there, it is a big game on Saturday against Guildford. So, and then in Sunday in Coventry. So, I'm really hoping I can just slot in and you know, find my feet and continue to you know, the good form I've had in Austria. So, you know, time will tell, but fingers crossed.
And that, I suppose that the advantage of you coming in, being a return into this league, I think we kind of got caught a little cold in Guildford, certainly. A lot of new guys coming in and a new rink to them, a new setup. No such excuses for yourself.
No, exactly. And obviously, even the systems that, you know, Kiefer has the boys playing, you know, I should be used to those. So, yeah, no excuses this weekend for me.
Hooky, welcome back, first of all. I sort of checked in with you now and again while you were out there. I didn't know it at the time, but I messaged you a few days ago just saying you're banging them in for fun if you could only stay out of the bleeping box. So I'm glad to have you back in the EI where you're going to get away with that again. You know, none of that European nonsense. But I mean, like, seriously, though, you look at those points that you're putting up, and I meant it. You know, your plus or minus is 9. You had 10 goals, 10 assists by the time you'd left in 16 games. Obviously, circumstantially, it's probably not the way you saw it panning out. But surely you can't leave with regret whenever you went out there to test yourself in a high-level European league and you know that you can do it.
Yeah, for sure. And that was like the biggest thing. It was always, I didn't want to finish my career and, you know, have the what if I went and it worked out, or, you know, I just kind of wanted to see how I could do over there, you know, playing a different style. They obviously play, you know, more of a skating style, you know, not as physical sort of thing, hence the more penalty minutes. But
I didn't really mean that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the way I left was kind of negative, but also the whole experience, I only have, you know, positive vibes with it. And obviously the team were great as well. The coaches were great. So, you know, I'm glad I did it and, you know, kind of lived that experience. But obviously, again, like I keep saying, I am glad to be back now. So
I was taking a look through the sort of elite prospects as awesome. They've added a whole bunch of new stuff, but they've got a nationality breakdown of European leagues now. And there really is not an awful lot of English speaking going on out there. The league is comprised of 37.8 Austrian, 36.5 Italian, and tiny fractions of really the rest of Europe. There's only 4.3 Canada and 0.9 USA. So you're talking of just over 5% of the league is native English speaking. For a boy from Peterborough heading out there for the first time and trying to set up home and trying to, you know, go about your life, even going shopping, you know, going out, going to the pub. What was it like? Was it a culture shock? Did you settle in quickly to being somewhere so foreign?
No, it was definitely a big culture shock for me. Where we were as well, it was kind of like a small ski town. There wasn't a lot of like franchise, you know, food chains or anything like that. So and obviously the language barrier, you know, granted everyone and most people in Europe speak, you know, really good English anyway. So it took I think that's kind of related into the hockey as well. It took a while to get used to, and I think once I kind of really settled down, that's when like my hockey started to take off as well. But you know, I can't really speak highly enough of the town and obviously Austria itself. Everyone's, you know, really welcoming. It's obviously a beautiful country, but yeah, it was difficult at times. Obviously, that's, you know, I don't speak any German, so constantly every day explaining to people that you don't speak German and, you know, you speak English, you feel a little bit, you know, stupid at times. But everyone kind of understood it, and obviously the coach spoke English in his meetings. So we had three Finnish guys and a Latvian, so they all didn't speak German either. So Overall, it was okay, you know. Like I'm glad to be back here, though. But even though the accent,
it hasn't gotten any better.
You're used to it now. Yeah. That's the way it is. I will say the Kitzbühel is a fantastic place to go. I know this. I sent you a message earlier on saying I was once carried out of the Londoner pub in Kitzbühel. On one ski trip. Yeah.
There's always a story, Patrick.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It was a fantastic ski resort, like a beautiful place to go. Clearly. But Austria is a very easy place to, you know. And that one of the questions come from Twitter is just said, did you get a chance to try out the slopes in Kitzbühel? I don't suppose you would have, a ski season only starting. Would you be allowed to actually? Would it be in your contract? Would you be allowed to?
I'm not really sure, actually. I don't know how it kind of went about, but I'm sure, you know, being in a ski town, they've kind of got to be, you know, they got to let you out a little bit. But it actually didn't snow until the day I left. No skiing for me. So
we got a couple of other questions coming from Twitter. I'm going to go one from Dylan Cackey saying, when are we hitting the town, buddy? I owe you a few pints. And then from Glenda saying, Lewis, make sure you get that pint from Dylan.
There we go.
He's legal now. While you were gone, Dylan became a man, mate. God help us all.
But that's it. Are you coming into a great deal of familiarity? So, you know, obviously when the decision was, that, you know, and for the right decisions that it came to leave Austria, were there options other than Belfast, or was your focus on Belfast?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely options elsewhere, but I think, you know, my eyes were only really drawn to Belfast. I think even leaving Belfast in the summer was really difficult for me. Even though it was kind of something I wanted to do, obviously with the Europeans, you know, move. But yeah, as soon as I knew I was coming home, there was, you know, it didn't really matter whatever offers were on the table. I was always looking to come back to Belfast for sure.
I'm sure there was plenty of offers from the other teams in the IHL. British, you know, talented British players are obviously at a premium. Yeah. What's your own targets then, Lewis, for the rest of the season? Got to have some personal ones as well. I know it's team first, yeah, but you got to have a few personal ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I've never really, like, moved teams in between, like, halfway through seasons and stuff like that. So in terms of, like, point production and stuff, I don't really know or have any goals just as of yet. So I think the main thing is just to try and continue the form that I've been in the last, you know, four or five weeks. Obviously, just try and slot into the team and wherever keeper sees me, and obviously just try and, you know, maybe just pick up where I left off last season, the second half of last season. That's kind of my main goals right now, I think. And then obviously as the weeks go on, maybe more goals will kind of, you know, set themselves out for myself.
I guess you will have been watching and team, and obviously we're a bit struck with injuries at the minute. And I think it's fair to say that that top line of Goody, Conway and Coops, obviously Coops down the minute, already playing up in the top line. The secondary and tertiary scoring in the team has been what's probably lacking. So coming in there and trying to get a second line going and scoring is probably going to be something high up your list of priorities.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe like you said, the first line has been firing, and obviously that's just what they're doing is pretty amazing right now. And then yeah, if I can, you know, come in and contribute to some second scoring, then great. But you know, I just want to, you know, slot in and obviously as nicely and then quickly as possible. You know, and just and play my game, you know, physical, try and use my speed again, and then yeah, obviously I score as many goals as possible.
Okay, we should have said where in the world are you right now? Are you in Belfast yet? Have you stopped over home? Where are you?
But I'm in Belfast now. I flew in to London on Sunday and then got the ferry Monday morning. So
did you get the Simon Kitchen taxi?
No, I didn't. We actually bought our own car, so.
Oh, no kitschy taxi, man. He must have been on a rare day off. We obviously saw the messages pouring in there whenever you appeared on the show tonight. There's a lot of excitement to have you back. What is it that you're most looking forward to about being back here now? Probably something that you maybe thought you wouldn't be back, maybe that it would happen maybe someday down the line, but certainly not as quick as it has done. The lifestyle in Belfast, what are you looking forward to doing again? And talk to me a bit about playing in front of that Teal Army again, who obviously love you very much.
Yeah, I mean, just to wrap that all into the same answer, like the biggest thing, you know, I missed when I left Belfast and went to Austria was, one, you know, the crowd that you get to play in here is amazing, you know, the amount of them and how loud they are and how supportive they are. So I think that's one thing I'm definitely, you know, I can't wait to, you know, when we played a doubleheader in Manchester, I can't wait to, you know, step out onto that ice in front of that crowd. And then, you know, within the team as well, like a lot of friends within the team, you know, Longer, Laker, Goody, Garth, you know, all the boys from last year. You know, I really missed playing with them. Like I said, the team that I was with were great, but I think, you know, you kind of, you know, these guys are really my, like, you know, good friends of mine. So like, the chance to like go to work with them every day and, you know, battle for them and battle with them, it's really special. So I think those are the two biggest things I'm really looking forward to getting back into.
Love that.
Thank you. They've just come in with one of the questions that came in from Lucy Hamilton. What was the first thing you did upon your turn to Belfast, apart from getting your hair cut by the best barber in Belfast?
He's not fit me in yet. I've got a haircut booked tomorrow with him. So
he's a big deal now, mate. He seems to have forgotten the people who were there for him whenever he was still learning. He's a big deal now. You're going to have to
see. He didn't do yours, Joel, did he?
He certainly didn't cut your hair.
I was waiting for that.
That's a shocker.
Yeah.
But the Halloween's over, mate.
That's disgraceful. Carry on.
Yeah, but the first thing I did, obviously skated this morning. There was not no ice, I skated this morning. But then we went to the Belfast market that opened maybe at the weekend, did it? So we walked down there for a hot chocolate tonight before this podcast. That was the first thing I did.
Love it.
Fantastic. Before we let you go, obviously the two games this weekend, and obviously you're digging in and starting to prepare for those, but also this weekend is the NCAA Friendship Four, and it's something that we've been waiting 3 years to come back. We're about to move on and chat to some of the coaches, but from your point of view, are you looking forward to seeing this? I think you'll get to see some games on Friday.
Yeah, I think we're down there on Friday. I think we're doing a sign-in session as well. Yep. But yeah, it's great for the city, obviously. It's great for, I was saying this to one of the guys today, it's great for obviously Steve and Kiefer for future recruitment. I think, you know, you've seen that with guys that have played in that Friendship Four, and then a couple of years later, they're on the Belfast team. And I think that's both from obviously Kiefer and Steve being able to see them in action in these tournaments, but also those guys that you come over to Belfast, they get to see the city, they get to see the country, and obviously, you know, a couple of years down the line, it works well for both ways. So I think it's great in all for both sides that are involved. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing some games on Friday for sure.
Fantastic. Well, listen, mate, you don't need me to tell you or the lads here to tell you that how delighted we are to see you back. You know, and we're looking forward to seeing you with those skates on in Teal once again. You saw it from the reception you've had from the guys who are watching on, and also from the likes of tweets and Facebooks and stuff. And we're delighted to see you back with the team, and hopefully we'll get to chat to you again as the season goes on.
Yeah, 100%. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks.
Thank you, bud.
Thank you, Lewis.
Big thanks to Lewis Hook for joining us. Great to have him back in Teal with the Belfast Giants. And just the sort of player, Davey, we need right now.
As we talked about like last season, coming up with that secondary scoring, and you know, one of the premium guys on the team. Talk about British talent, about being key, especially when your imports drop out. That, like, there have been, what did we say, 5-6 guys out, like, name them, Bomber, Coops, Butcher, Rayner. Some more there. Sam Roop, there's somebody else off the top of my head I can't remember there, but you've 6 of your 14 imports out injured at the minute. So, you know, to have be able to call on someone like Lewis Hook to step into the lineup, you know what you're going to get. This is he's not an unknown quantity. He'll get you goals, he'll get you assists, he'll bring a bit of physicality, he'll bring speed, and speed kills. We talk about it all the time. He can only add positive things to the lineup. So, looking forward to see him going again this weekend, especially in Guildford.
And as you pointed out, Joel, you know, a real positive response from the fan base to his return.
It was obvious. It was one of those ones that dropped kind of out of nowhere on a midweek night. And the response online just set it all for me. Lewis Hook's a player that I think that we brought to the Belfast Giants when he was still, you know, fairly young. He'd proven himself at the sort of English league level. I said often in his early years with the Giants that he reminded me of Craig Peacock whenever we initially brought him to Belfast, another Peterborough kid, and that his best years were still ahead of him. And I thought sort of during the summer whenever he left for pastures, knew that his best years were going to be played out somewhere else. So I see this as a lovely opportunity that I didn't think we were going to have to get what one of the premier Brits, as you say, Paddy, absolutely massive point there at a premium these days. You know, high-end Brits are hen's teeth right now in the Elite Ice Hockey League. So thank God Hookie has decided to come back home and put on the teal again.
I'm a big fan of these messages coming out about your haircut, so keep them coming if you've got any more comments about Joel Neal's, you know, to force him for the rest of the remaining 20-odd shows of this season to wear a hat.
The headphones are doing me dirty, man. It's a decent wee skin feel on the side.
I assume, like, angry Danielle did that or something. Like, you didn't.
You know, like, whenever you were a kid and your dad said that you looked ridiculous, so you knew you looked all right. I'm happy enough.
Right, boys, as I mentioned there, the Harness Friendship Four for 2022 is back this weekend on Friday, and we had an opportunity to chat with a few of the coaches and one of the captains, and we'll start off with UMass Lowell and Quinnipiac. With the 2022 Harness Friendship Four literally days away, it's an absolute pleasure to be joined by the coach who was the first one to win that award, to win the tournament back in 2015, and that is Coach Norm Bazin of UMass Lowell. Coach, it's hard to believe it's 7 years since you first rung that bell over the ice at the SSE Arena.
Yeah, no question. It's gone by awfully fast. It seems like just yesterday, but here we are 7 years later, and we're ready to take a new team over there.
let's take you back to that first tournament, first of all, 7 years ago, and that cohort that you brought over. Obviously, it was not just new to you guys, it was new to us here with regards to the Belfast organization. But I remember a comment that you made post-game when we had a chat about how it was as close to a Frozen Four atmosphere that you could have come.
Yeah, no question. You like to attend and participate in these mini tournaments because it gives you a inside look at what you're going to have to do in order to attend a Frozen Four and win a Frozen Four. You got to get through two very intense hockey games, and that's why it mirrors that regional very well.
What were your recollections of that first tournament? You know, obviously you guys were successful in that, and but overall it seemed that and the package that we've had in years since is giving that sort of rounded experience for that cohort of students who come over.
Yeah, well, I do remember several things. First of all, the Belfast were great hosts. You guys did an outstanding job. It was a first-class tournament. The kids got to visit with some school children in the area. That was really neat. I do remember a few activities that the team participated in, and we were very well hosted by a bunch of very genuine people. So we really enjoyed our trip.
When it comes to it, obviously some of these kids would be come over, maybe playing abroad for the first time, maybe some of them even traveling abroad for the first time outside of North America. What sort of rounded experience do you feel it gives them?
Well, there's no question. College hockey gives you a host of new experiences. And for many of our guys, as you mentioned, it's a first time playing abroad. And it's what a wonderful opportunity for those guys. I wouldn't want to take that away from them at any point because it is a unique experience. And it's one that they'll cherish and remember for all their lives.
How do you feel your team are over the last number of years? Obviously, since the tournament, the postseason tournament was cancelled due to COVID. You know, you've been Hockey East runners up. You were the NCAA regional semifinalists. Do you feel you've got a strong team coming into the Friendship Four this year?
Yeah, we do. We feel good about our team. I think we're a work in progress. I think every year about this time, we're trying to figure out who our best group to field the game is. And barring a few injuries, we've played mostly with our group, and we're looking to have a good weekend here before we head out to Ireland on Sunday.
Obviously, coming back to that last tournament, you know, it was the first experience for your team and whatever. Do you feel that it maybe galvanized your team coming back in for the rest of the season, that sort of experience going abroad?
Yeah, whenever you have these type of excursions, these type of experiences for your group, just spending a week together and with no distractions like this, it can't do anything but galvanize the group. And it's exciting. It's exciting for the guys. And winning it was a huge bonus.
What sort of team do you feel you have this year coming into this tournament? And obviously, we've seen in the last number of years, not least with your own teams, the players that Belfast fans and fans who travel to watch the tournament we'll see who will maybe go on to play NHL, AHL, Coast League, or maybe go on to something else. But do you feel you've got a strong team?
Yeah, we do. We do. We've got excellent goaltending. We've got good team defense. And, we've got opportunistic forwards. So we do feel that we've got a couple of those guys you mentioned that will go on to play at the higher pro levels. But overall, I think it's our attack, our depth, which is going to give some success if we hope to be in the championship game.
Fantastic. And, do you feel that there's any weight upon your shoulders, having won it previously, that you're coming back, that you have to pick it up again?
No, I think it just gives you incentive to do well, incentive to come back. It's exciting. I don't mind it. I don't mind talking about it. Expectation is good when it comes to championships.
Listen, Coach, obviously you say you fly on Sunday for hopefully what will be a great experience for you and for your team. We look forward to seeing you at the SSE Arena in the games on Friday and Saturday, and thanks very much for your time.
Great. It's my pleasure, and we look forward to seeing you.
With the Friendship Four only days away, I'm delighted to be joined by a man who is a multiple-time All-Star at ECAC, and he is now, of course, the captain of Quinnipiac, hoping to be ringing that bell centre ice at the SSE Arena at the end of the Friendship Four. Zach Metta, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, great, mate. Great. Really looking forward to this tournament. Obviously, it's not the first time for Quinnipiac, but it's the first time for you. What's the excitement like about coming over to Belfast to take part in this tournament?
I'm fired up. It's gonna be a cool experience. I heard a lot of good things from past players that went over before. We were supposed to do this, I think, during the COVID year or maybe the year after. It got delayed, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to have the opportunity to make it over. So something we've been looking forward to. I've personally never been in Europe, just in general. Traveling is a week for me, and overall, main thing is just it'll be a sweet experience. Coming over and seeing Belfast and just kind of being in a completely different environment.
That's interesting. Obviously with the delay due to COVID and the likes, it has pushed it out, and a lot of us here have been really looking forward to the return of the Friendship Four. But for you to have that opportunity and come back as captain this time rather than just being in your junior or sophomore year, it adds a real boost to it.
Especially with that bell. I remember the other guys talking about the trophy you get and ringing the bell at sunrise. So I definitely want to do that.
First time for you, some of your cohort as well. It's first time that they might be going outside of North America. What does that offer to you guys? Because obviously there's a lot more than the hockey. You guys will obviously be focused on what takes place on the ice, but that opportunity for you guys to galvanize as a unit, to go abroad and to have this must be fantastic.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's good team bonding. Like our equipment manager used to work for Tampa Bay. Before the season, before they won the Stanley Cup, they went to Sweden. And he credits a lot of their team camaraderie and how close they were as a unit to that trip. So this is, early in the season. It's kind of a perfect little thing for our group too. Just experiencing traveling together, going through a whole, sightseeing and all these different experiences we're going to be able to do together. And it's just going to bring us closer. So it's going to be really cool.
I'm speaking here before you play. You have a couple of games against Princeton to take over the next couple of days, but you've been on a bit of a winning streak of late. You seem to be coming into this tournament in a thick vein of form.
Yeah, I think we've every game here we've kind of taken steps in the right direction. We've been, we haven't been perfect, but we know that. So just kind of working every day. Princeton will be a great test for us this weekend to hopefully keep, I think we're on a 5-game win streak right now. So hopefully we keep that going and, really head to Belfast hot.
And you're coming up against Dartmouth in that first game, obviously, you go against your own in your own division in that, and you haven't played them this season yet, but what are you expecting?
They're going to be tough. They're well coached. And they're going to bring it. We know we have a target on our back every time we play, being Quinnipiac and being a top five team in the country right now. And they've always been a team that works and never gives up anything easy. They have real good goaltending. They've been playing well to start the year, so it's going to be a fun test. It should be a really good game in Belfast.
What are you looking to draw from this, Zach? From yourself, you've made your way now as captain as Quinnipiac, and you've had the experiences there. What are you hoping to gain from this trip to Belfast?
I think kind of like we said before, obviously we want to win. We want to be able to focus on hockey and, come out with 2 wins and win a tournament. But ultimately, I think a big thing, like we just talked about, is kind of team camaraderie, coming together as a group during this trip and just becoming closer. You kind of need that if you want to win championships, which is our goal at the end of the year. So it'll be a great experience for our group and great test also on the ice.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, this is a safe trip. We look forward to seeing you over in Belfast, and good luck in the Friendship Four.
Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Norm Bison of UMass Lowell.
Snared. The gems was practically in bed there.
The that was fun. Had a wee jumper all around me, Joel, to keep me warm. I'm freezing.
Put your jumper on, mate. You don't have to put the t-shirt on.
Big thanks to Zach Metz. Four interviews there. You see, I was waiting for an hour to.
No, there's more. There's more to come, Davey, but they're coming later in the show. Big thanks to, they say, to Zach Mehta and the Norm Bazin, Mehta of Quinnipiac. Just they did win those back-to-back games against Princeton in the build-up. This game will come a bit more of a friendship for chat after we get the other two interviews. They'll be coming up in just a few minutes. But before that, Joel, there's a bit of news to talk about.
There is a bit of news, Patrick. Let's take a look. Yeah, get you back down there, son. Kick back. Don't you won't even like it, Davey. It's about other teams and the Panthers. So you just switch off for 2 minutes here. This past week in the Viaplay Elite League, the Coventry Blaze kicked off the week's fixtures with a 4-0 win over the Dundee Stars at the Skydome. And on Friday night, the Guildford Flames travelled to Nottingham, where they kept it rolling with a 4-2 win over the Panthers. On Saturday, they did it again, needing OT for a 4-3 win back at the Spectrum for a four-point weekend. Meanwhile, the Stars bounced back at home with a 4-2 win over the Fife Flyers, and the Glasgow Clan recorded their second league victory of the season with a 4-1 win over the Blaze in Brayhead. On Sunday, the Clan went one better and recorded their first four-point weekend of the season. Pigs will fly with a 4-2 win over the Manchester Storm in Aldringham, and the Blaze traveled to Scotland for a 3-2 win over the Flyers, leaving Todd Didium's side with no points on the weekend and only 5 wins from 18 on the season. Paddy, it's been a couple of weeks. I think everybody needs it. There's a cost of living on. It's dark outside. It's cold. It's miserable. I think it's time for a wee statement, Claxton, mate. There's been a statement, everybody.
Statement, Claxton!
There's been a Viaplay statement. Sexy Nielsen
breaking news
back in the Elite Ice Hockey League. There has been
sexy
a return.
Nielsen Hockey is back.
Confirmed return of Sexy Nielsen Hockey in the Elite Ice Hockey League. News broke this morning that the Nottingham Panthers had parted company with head coach Gary Graham, with CEO, and is he a friend of the show still now that he's down there? That's out. I think the jury's out on that. Omar Pasha saying, unfortunately, results have not been what the club was looking for. We feel like making a change and bringing in a new voice will help give new direction to the group. Under Graham, the Panthers went 4 wins, 2 OT wins, 1 OT loss and 8 losses through their opening 15 league games and picked up 4 out of 8 in the Challenge Cup, which is not stellar. 3 hours later this afternoon then, Corey Nielsen was reappointed as the head coach of the Nottingham Panthers. Technically, yes. There's been a second statement on the day. 3 hours later, Corey has spent 3 seasons in Del 2 in Germany and stint this year in Norway and Slovakia, in addition to his Team GB coaching duties alongside Pete Russell and Adam Keefe. As a player and a coach for the Panthers, he's won a combined 5 playoffs, 7 Challenge Cups, 1 Elite League title, just 1 Elite League title, 1 Continental Cup, and led the Panthers to the last 16 of the CHL. Nielsen said, I'm going to try my best to read this out and keep a straight face. I love the Nottingham Panthers. I always have, ever since I walked through the door. I think this is a great opportunity to take some. And Pai said, Europe and getting more experience, I'm confident that we're getting the best version of Corey Nielsen to put us back in a forward trend as a club. What do we think, boys? Corey is back in the Elite League. We're rolling back the years.
Simon. Corey Nielsen's back. Fair enough. As in, he wasn't doing anything anyway, was he? He had a bit of a stint with about 3 or 4 teams last season. Ended up at the Cassell Huskies in the DEL2, got them to quarterfinals of the playoffs, got knocked out there, and then they've got another coaching team brought in there. So I guess if you want to bring in a coach who is experienced in this league, experienced with the organization, albeit an evolving organization under Omar Pasha, but a guy who's experienced this league, but then, you know, if it doesn't work, mm-hmm. Is he A, hurting his legacy, or is he B, saying these just weren't my guys?
The Ronaldo quandary.
the Ronaldo. Is the language, if it doesn't work, the line's either these aren't my guys, or the Panthers fans are wondering why did they bring in Corey Nielsen. It's very telling that they've also said that it's to the end of the season. So they're obviously not planning long term for him to be there, or maybe they're giving him this chance and they'll come back in and say, you know, okay, well, you did all right, so build your own team. Interesting. Yeah. No, you can't knock Nielsen's credentials. He has the credentials in this league to do it a lot more than Gary Graham did. So yeah, from my point of view, Panthers.
Ivy?
Nothing to add. It's always very difficult for a coach from outside this league to come in and have like major success. Who has there been ever that hasn't played in or, you know, been a part of this league for a long time? You know, Ben Simon would be
Ben Simon's the only one who's in my head there.
But he had played.
Yep. He was a player coach.
Before he became the player coach. Outstanding player and went on the good things in the States. Probably still is. You know, Corey Nielsen, PC Druin rule. It's hard to know what'll PC happen Druin, there. Yeah. He's obviously came, you know, as his shirt, his number was raised thereafter. pretty much when he was announced as leaving. So he's got to come play under his own banner, and you know, all the pressures that that brings. And yeah, it does. It'll bring its own pressures. And there's ready-made excuses, if you said there, Paddy. You know, these weren't my guys. I wouldn't have recruited them. But he's also got, you know, probably moves that they can make him. You know, if him and Pass can get together on the money side of things, and you know, they'll maybe make some roster changes. They need to. There's a bit of a gap developing between the sort of the top chunk and the bottom chunk, and the Panthers just. You know, they need to bridge that gap. And was it the right time to make a change? You know, probably. I've seen a lot on Twitter. I've seen a lot on Twitter today from what I would call long-term Panthers fans that didn't come as any surprise to them. They were hoping and expecting a change. So, like, for Nottingham, not that I've got any great love for them, you know, I wish them no success, but it's one of those.
The time is definitely there for them to make some changes. It's whether the capacity is there to make some changes, because obviously there's rules against changes and the amount of changes you're allowed to make.
Yeah.
The other side of it is, I'm thinking, is it's not been a great season for the Black family and the two teams that they have and the goings on that are happening in Clan and the changes there. And then obviously there's a transition happening in Nottingham. You have to give Pash time to have that transition. He obviously didn't pick the best coach to start with, and the team that was put together probably wasn't his team. But we'll see how it goes with Corey and whether Corey's given a rein to recruit as well as coach.
Yeah, it's much more than just.
I read a lot about the Blacks, and I read a lot of fans saying, you know, that they treat the Nottingham Panthers like a bit of a cash cow. And I can't imagine that Neil Black has made his fortunes, which he must have to be. He must have money. If you're investing in a nice hockey team in the UK, you must already have money. I don't know what he does. But I would say that he hasn't invested in the Glasgow / Brayhead Clan and the Nottingham Panthers to make his money. He's not making his money at these clubs. and without Neil Black, where would the Nottingham Panthers and where would the Glasgow Brayhead Clan be? So, you know, be very careful what you wish for. These guys could step away at any time, and you're waiting for somebody to come in and hope that they're going to invest more than Neil Black's investing. You just be very careful what you wish for.
I think that's a great point. And it is the case of, you know, the amount of ones who said, you know, we want Neil Black to sell up, we want new owners. Do you? Because ultimately you have had success under this owner. It's just getting the right chemistry. And, you know, there have been the changes made, and, you know, okay, you know, obviously Gary Moran sadly passed away, but they've had to make the changes. They rang the changes and they brought in Omar Pasha. And we know Pasha. Pasha knows this league. And he also knows how to put together teams. So, yes, maybe this team isn't what he wanted. I get the feeling that it's not his team. I get the feeling it's Gary Graham's team, and there's changes to be made there. But whether Corey's going to make the changes, or Pash is going to make the changes, or there's going to be a battle between the two of them, it'll be interesting to see where the Nottingham Panthers go from here to the end of the season.
Like, I know Joe's busting to get going here, but before you finish, stability for me in any sporting organisation, stability year on year is the only key. It's the only recipe to success. Man United with Alex Ferguson, Wenger and Arsenal, and you know, the Belfast Giants have kind of got this boot room policy, you know, where Kiefer has came from playing in it. Steve Thornton's been involved with the club since the early 2000s. Okay, he's been and gone. Jeff Mason was here. George Awada's back. You know, you go through it. Shane Johnson, Todd Kelman was here, and he's gone to Cardiff, and he's setting up, you know, and when you continue, it's a transient sport as well, and it's very hard to bring back course because if a core is very successful, then that core is more expensive the next year. And if your budget can't go up, then you've got to then fill in lesser pieces around it. And then if the team's not as successful, who do you blame? Do you blame the coach? Do you blame the success of the players the year before that don't quite? There's so many factors. And maybe Pass's biggest mistake was the coach that they hired and the team that they recruited. And now Corey Nielsen can come in there, see if he can steady the ship. And as you say, it's only the end of the season. For me, I'd have been, you know, I think Corey Nielsen could be there longer than March next year.
I think he will be. But it's all, I guess, it's, you know, from a point of view of Pash, you know, he's coming in. Gary Graham's the first coach he's had to hire. You know, he's been the GM up in Dundee. He was the coach in Manchester. I can't remember who the GM was, but he was but you know, he's never had to do that before. I can't remember. But
Ricky GM, yeah. See, it's just
but no,
enjoy
but
your holiday.
To be honest with you, you know, the Panthers have brought Corey Nielsen in, and I hope he crash burns and fails. So,
and we reach the crux. Just quickly, boys, before we move on, a bit of Dops news. Dops has fined your Belfast Giants head coach Adam Keefe for an incident in the game between the Giants and Steelers on the 19th of November. That was the Saturday, I think. Saturday. And warned him about his future conduct. Effective immediately, Belfast Giants head coach Adam Keefe is fined for his actions, brackets, abusive officials at 60 minutes. The incident will be recorded on the team's record for the remainder of the season, with Keefe classified as a repeat offender and subject to further tariffs if future incidents occur. The Department of referee's feelings, I don't know. Yeah, he certainly, I mean, I texted you boys and said, you know, if you hold that against football, you know, my other world, Kiefer was lit up, and I think, you know, rightly so. There was a decision there that maybe, you know, cost us at least a point in the game. It was a game that was refereed quite poorly, and I've seen football coaches sent to the stands and banned for less. But at the same time, is it within Dops's remit to be dishing out suspensions for referees getting a mouthful?
The second time you've brought that comment up. Go for it.
Yeah, well, this was on, I think this was the second game where Petgrave's going to the penalty box and he just manhandles the referee, or the lino, sorry. And I know Matty Carton, who does a bit of reffing in the lino and himself, has said it was an abusive official, but the linesman can't actually call. They would have to report the referee. So tights out, he didn't grass him up, so that's fair enough. But, you know, spoke to a referee in this league a little while ago about abusive official, and okay, you can't, the physicality side of it, you cannot touch an official. I absolutely find there sometimes you've got to be able to take a little bit of abuse, and I also think you should be fit to be allowed to give it out with your stripes on as well. If you're going to, if some of the things you hear, it should be allowed to go both ways, and nobody should get too bent out of shape other than leaving it that. I think Adam Keefe was quite within his rights to have a go at the ref and linesman. He wasn't getting satisfaction in what was saying back, and yeah, he's probably lost his temper a little bit there. There's some good shots from the bench of George Iwata trying to not get involved in it, but look, it is what it is. It's not a Department of Player Safety thing. I think that statement should have just came via the league as a kind of overarching...
You're watching. Just
my other point is, Davey, and I'll come in there. My other point is that, man, I had a message on Twitter earlier on from a mate who was saying, you know, asking if we were talking about the referees, are we allowed to talk about the referees? And I don't think the referees should be above criticism. You shouldn't. Yeah. Yes, you should be allowed, but I don't believe there should be a level where you're not allowed to criticize the referee when they don't have a great game. And it feels that from an official's point of view, or from the Giants' point of view, and the same thing is in football. If you look at Premier League, if you criticize a referee publicly, then you get fined or you get a sanction against you. And I don't think that's the right thing. I don't think the referees should be above that, really.
Yeah, it's fair. Last in news this week, they're letting us common folk into Davies' world. I don't know if you've noticed this, but the EIHL website has started to publish average time on ice for each team so far. Never seen that before, but your Giants top five so far, just out of interest. Gabe Bast is top in terms of average minutes per game at 23.58. Sam Ruop second, 21.56. Equal to him in third, David Goodwin. Mark Cooper fourth, 21.42, and Scott Conway 21.34.5. It's a cool wee stat I had never really seen. It's certainly the league pushing out before. But that's your news, Patrick Smith. I know we're running late.
We are running. We're not running late.
I've got some issues with that, but no, he's not.
I would have thought you would have. Yeah. They should be coming to you for these.
We love getting these comments in during the show. We've just had one in from our good friend Mark Brooks, who says, you know, it's a great show tonight, very insightful, but my question is, did you all have any Irish League scores from tonight?
No, but Paddy, move on. We're running late here.
No, we're going to move on. We're moving on. Sorry, Brooks.
Never heard of the guy. No.
Well, while we're waiting, we obviously had the two. We've already had UMass Lowe and Quinnipiac. Let's go to UMass Amherst and to Dartmouth in the Friendship Four. It's another interview ahead of the 2022 Harness Friendship Four. It's another returning university in UMass, and it's another returning coach in Coach Greg Carroll. Coach, how are you doing?
I'm great, Patrick. Happy to be here.
So you know, it seems like an age ago with everything that's went on in between, but in reality, it's not that long since you were last in Belfast competing in the Friendship Four. And what's it like? What do you think brings you back to competing in Belfast?
We're excited. We had a great experience the first time. That was my first year at UMass, and this is now my seventh, and a lot's transpired in between. We didn't have a very strong team that first year, but we still had a great experience. So excited to go back with a different team.
Like you say, that was your first year, and since then, what a career you've had at UMass. Frozen Four, national championships. You were able to take a team that you had to build, and you built them into one hell of an outfit.
Yeah, well, you know, we that following year, we brought in our first recruiting class, had a player named Kale McCarr in it, which you may be familiar with. Mm-hmm. But not only him, we had four or five kids in that first class that had signed NHL contracts. So we kickstarted it, and our third year we played in the national championship game and lost. The fourth year we had a strong team, but it was COVID, and then the fifth year we won the national championship. And last year we defended our Hockey East title. So we've had a very good run. We're in a bit of a rut right now this year. We've lost a handful of games in a row, but excited to get over and play our rival in the Lowell Riverhawks, which we've had a lot of great games with over the last number of years.
You say, no, obviously, you know, we appreciate you joining us today, which is a game day for you guys, and you're heading up to Durham to face North Hampshire. You know, it's you're saying it as well, you're trying to break a bit of a rut and a losing streak that you've got now. But with the view of going into Belfast in that first game against Lowell, and then obviously I think you'll bring them back after the tournament for another game, you know, and that rivalry there, what are you expecting from those games?
They're really hard games at Lowell, and they're very low scoring. If you look at the last 3-4 years, I don't know if any games and decided by more than a goal. We played them 4 times last year. At least one went into overtime, and then the other three we squeaked out very close wins. So expect the same, but hopefully we can get a win here today. We have a night, as you said, we play with UNH here tonight before getting on the plane Sunday. And I think we're on the same plane with Lowell, so maybe the rivalry may be heating up in the air on the way over.
What did your that last cohort that you brought over to Belfast, what do you think they gained from that trip?
Well, exactly what I'm hoping we gain this time is tremendous opportunity for us to bond as a team, lifelong experiences. I know that we learned that we wanted to do more while we were in Belfast, beyond just the hockey part of it, more experiencing the culture and the landscape and the people. It was magnificent last time. And the weather was great, too. We got a ton of sun, and everybody told us that wasn't the norm, so don't get used to that. But everything was outstanding last time. And one of the small byproducts was the gentleman who helped tour us while we were there. We became such good friends with him that he comes back to UMass every year, and he visits with us, and he's become a close friend. His name's Brian Waters.
I know Brian well.
Yep. Brian is an awesome man, and we see him all the time. Feels like we see him all the time. Next thing you know, he's already back again. So he's excited to host us again when we get back.
He's a gem, is Brian. He's a great guy with regards to the organization. And I know he travels over there, and he's always in contact saying that he's going over, and he really enjoys his time and the hospitality that you guys show him. You know, it's like you say, it's fantastic that we have this opportunity for you guys to be able to come back. What is it you think is about Belfast that draws universities back? Is it just the package that they offer?
Yeah. The teams that went over before us all raved about their experience. And so we were excited to go the first time, and we've been raving about it since. I love the setup. It's a great small city. Everything's walkable. People are tremendously friendly. And then I think most schools, I know we do, use it as an opportunity to learn about the history of, you know, the troubles and, you know, the longstanding difficulties that existed there. So it's an academic experience. We all watch Game of Thrones, and I think we're all having some interaction with that. The hockey's great. It's a great facility. The Belfast Giants do a great job making us feel at home. So then there's some really good hockey teams playing good hockey. So it's an all around great experience.
And how do you feel about your side? Obviously, we mentioned about how you're trying to break a bit of a losing streak at the minute, but how do you feel about your side and this year's cohort as you bring them over?
Well, we started the year strong. We beat the number one team in the country twice. So it shows we're capable of playing good hockey. Recently, we've had a lot of injuries, and goaltending has not been as strong as it's capable of being. And we've played some good hockey teams. So it's just a bad combination of things. We got to find a way to put the puzzle pieces together and start getting on the right side of some games here.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's good wins against Denver and Union before coming into what you have now. But hopefully, like you say, you'll have a good game against New Hampshire today and then on the plane on Sunday. Coach, listen, we really appreciate you chatting to us, especially today being a game day. Safe trip on Sunday, and we look forward to seeing you back in Belfast for the Friendship Four.
Sounds good. Thanks, Patrick.
And our final interview for the ahead of the 2022 Harness Friendship Four is the only debutante in this year's tournament in Dartmouth Big Green. And we're joined by the head coach, a former Hobie Baker top 10 finalist, a man who won the Kelly Cup and also had a bit of time in Europe with the Linz Blackwings, Reid Cashman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So obviously, you know, you guys are the only debutante in this year's tournament. But what do you know of the tournament?
Yeah, so I coached at Quinnipiac, 2012 to 2016, and so that next year they were gone. So I was all excited to go and got all fired up for it. And then I ended up taking a job at the Washington's organization. So, but I've known of the tournament for a long time. I got hired here 2 years ago. It's one of the first questions I asked my athletic director is can we get over there and play in it? So extremely excited to be a part of it.
You know, like you say, you're going up against your former charges on Friday in Quinnipiac. And, safe to say, it's not been the best of starts of the season for you guys.
Yeah, no, we're trying to build it here, man. I mean, it's, the last four games, we've given up six goals, and the problem is we only scored four in the last three games, so we're 1-2-1 in those last four. And the opening weekend was a little bit of a learning curve for us. But with all that being said, we're six games into our year, and we got guys that are competing and we're working. And our goal is not to be the best team right now. It's to be the best team in March when playoffs roll around. And so we have a great group of young guys, young men that are working towards it. And then we fly overseas and play Quinnipiac, who's number four in the country. And then the two UMass teams are probably both top 15. So it'll be an awesome tournament to be a part of.
Do you see that? Therefore, do you see this as an opportunity or a distraction?
No, it's an opportunity. I mean, I think anytime you can go on the road, it helps build your team. And then, so much of college hockey and Dartmouth is what the experience is and what can we provide to the student athlete. And so this is going to be an unbelievable trip for our guys. See a different part of the world, play in a great rink. And then, yeah, again, we're playing a top five team. Like, we're really excited at that opportunity to go play them and compete our butts off and make a push at it.
One of the things, having chatted to some of the other coaches, not just this year, but in Friendship Fours in the past, is the opportunity for a group of lads who are coming over to be, and are going to be battling for the rest of the year to galvanize themselves as a team, and especially when they're going abroad. A lot of these kids might be leaving North America for the first time.
Yeah, I would say this. Most of our guys have not been to Europe, although we have a guy from Norway on our team, and so. Yeah, this is a really unique trip from that standpoint. We'll get to spend a lot of time with each other. We have a great, great setup, whether it's going to the school to visit the kids or, we're having a Thanksgiving dinner at the Titanic Museum. And it's just going to be a great trip for our program. And like I said, on top of that, we get to play a top five team.
You mentioned there, Trim Lockerberg, who obviously comes from Norway, and a couple of guys on that lineup. You've already have a few ties to the NHL going forward. It's an opportunity for those guys to sort of better themselves. It's an opportunity for us in Belfast and those who are traveling the tournament once again to see these kids who are on top of their game looking to better themselves.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that the fans that come out to watch the games next weekend, in 5 years, a whole bunch of these guys are going to be playing in the NHL from the four teams that are going over there. It's really high end hockey. Again, those other three programs are extremely established with where they're at. And that's what we're building towards. We're building towards kind of what those three have done. They're kind of non-traditional, I would say, schools in the hockey world, but all three have risen to the top of kind of their ranks. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be really, really good hockey.
Of course, this is the first time you've been a head coach, you've been associate head coach, you've been assistant coach, you spent some time in Europe with the Black Wings. How do you find the top job?
I love it. I love it. It's challenging. There's no doubt about it. Like there's, everything comes through you at the end of the day. But that was, I was excited for the challenge when I got the opportunity. It's, I love coming to the rink. It's, one of the reasons I left the NHL to come back to college was the relationship piece of it and in helping young men both at the rink and then outside the rink. And again, a place like Dartmouth that has such a great mentorship program, such a great academic component, and then what we can provide them hockey-wise, I just don't think there's a better job. And so I love being the head coach. I love this challenge. And I think we're all aware of kind of the direction we're going and we're striving towards it every day.
You mentioned there, obviously, you were the assistant coach at the Washington Capitals, and that's a rabbit hole I really don't want to go down. I could spend a half hour just talking to you about your time with the Washington Capitals, but we're here to talk about NCAA. And obviously, the ultimate goal is to ring that bell, center ice on Saturday. What do you know of Belfast and the hockey there?
Yeah, more so, like, again, when I was in Austria, I learned a lot about the European fans in general, right? And the drums and the standing and the clapping and the and then even after the game, every team seems to have a tradition and the fans stay there and you celebrate with the fans after wins. That was kind of my introduction to European hockey. And then just seeing Belfast and seeing it on YouTube and knowing that English league and it's known guys that have gone over to play. And then there's just the tradition that Belfast has won a lot and obviously you have a great coach and Keith there, and so I'm looking forward to learning more, but certainly know enough to be excited about where we're going.
And how's your preparations been? When do you fly, and how the preparations been for this trip?
Yeah, we're flying out Monday, so our guys actually have finals going on this weekend, their last finals Monday morning, so we'll jump on a plane Monday night and it'll be nice. Our guys will be done with school and clear-minded, and we'll land Tuesday morning over there in Dublin and take the bus up and get ready to go.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we really appreciate you joining us. Good luck for the tournament next weekend and safe travels to Belfast. Looking forward to seeing you there.
I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you over there. Thanks for your time.
The games are this weekend on Friday and on Saturday, 2 p.m. on Friday, Dartmouth take on Quinnipiac, and at 7 p.m., UMass Lowell take on UMass Amherst. Davey, you want me to stop?
I think without polishing your halo too much, that was really outstanding little insight into all those four teams. Really enjoyed that. You're too self-effacing to say it was any good, but it was really, really best part of the show.
Agree.
Thank you, gents. But it's the lads who answer the questions that are the ones that give the insight. I just push them a little bit. But yeah, the games this weekend are you've put me off there, Davey. Thank you. The 2 p.m. Two p.m. on Friday, Dartmouth for Quinnipiac open the Friendship Four. It's the first time in 3 years we've been able to host this, given all that's going on. And then at 7 p.m., UMass Lowell return former champions to take on UMass Amherst, who finished third the following year, at 7 p.m. on Friday. And then the third place game, 2 p.m. on Saturday. And then that Bell Pot final will be at 7 p.m. on Saturday. going to, yeah, on that bell. Where's that bell from again? I keep forgetting where that bell is.
Templemore Avenue, Templemore. East Belfast.
East Belfast.
School bell, school dinner bell. That's a brilliant story. Fantastic. Like, it's whoever came up with that or found that as the trophy. Outstanding.
Bravo. Well played. What are your thoughts of this tournament then, Davey?
Oh, excited. Look, it's always been, it's first of all, it's fantastically organized all year round, and the people have put so much effort into making this happen, both on this side of the pond and the other side of the pond. You know, these things don't just happen by accident or without an incredible amount of work going into them. The fellas that come from the schools are going to have a life-changing experience. They're going to be, well, they obviously play NCAA anyway, so it's not like they're playing a standard that they're not used to, but we're not used to seeing this level of hockey in Belfast from these students. Great style of hockey, fast, skillful, physical enough. And if you can get down to the SSE arena, make sure you're there, because this is it's not going to happen every year. I don't think, sure, it's going to be every other year, am I right? Or is it every year?
I can't remember.
It was every year. Because I think it's happened like, exclusive. I don't know. Was it not said that it was going to be boys and then the guards of boys? I can't remember. Sorry, maybe I'm completely getting my wires crossed there. But an absolutely sensational tournament, and I'm really, really looking forward to being in the building on Friday.
Joel?
Yeah, like I know we've had this discussion over and over again, but I just don't think it can be stated enough. This is NCAA, collegiate sports in North America is religion to the communities that they're based in, across all sports. You know, even if you look at American football, some of the crowds that it pulls, you know, and especially on the East Coast, they absolutely love their hockey. You know, it is a religion, and the fandoms that they have would out-passion a lot of sort of top-tier football in the UK. To have the only NCAA regular season games played outside of North America in our back garden is a privilege, and it's so easy to forget how cool that is as fans of the sport of hockey. And everybody who makes it happen should certainly receive the plaudits. It was really cool to hear a shout-out for wee Brian there.
Brian Waters, brilliant.
There's so many people, you know, aside from the obvious people who make this happen, like Robert Fitzpatrick, Steve Thornton, and the presidents of the respective conferences in North America, but there's so many people that really are the lifeblood of this tournament, and rightly so, they should get a wee tip of the cap. But no, again, I'm excited as always. It's amazing that the tournament hasn't been going so long, in world sport terms, but it already is creating legacy. You've got teams that are coming back. You've got players and coaches that are excited to get over here and have the experience that other players before them have had. The bell and the story behind it, the city and the story behind it, everything now is becoming folklore and legacy, and you can actually hear it in the players that they're excited to get over. And yeah, there you go. I mean, look at that in the Michigan.
Big chill at the big house.
Yeah, the Wolverine Stadium. Just monstrous crowds for hockey. And maybe the context is lost a little bit because hockey is a minority sport in the UK, but we are immensely privileged to have this in our back garden, and it's on us to get our bums in our seats and go and watch some of the most fast-paced, energetic, passionate hockey that you'll ever see in person. Yeah, I'm stoked. I can't wait. It's gonna be good to see you boys as well for the first time in quite a while.
It is. But Davey, you said that crowd in Ann Arbor in Michigan is just phenomenal. You know, I remember the Red Wings played the Maple Leafs there in that very same stadium. I can't remember how many years ago, but it's a phenomenal. But that's a stadium built for college sport. It's ridiculous the following it has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was over 100,000 that game, something like 104,000, 105,000 or something. That absolutely mental crowd. You know, there'd not be that big a crowd in the SSE just because we don't hold that anymore, or there would be. But you know, this, as Joel said, college sports in the US is very, very highly followed. Get big crowds, whatever the sport is, and you know, I'm sure there'd be people will be making their way across the Atlantic Ocean as well to follow their teams here in Belfast, and it's a little bit of an experience for them. And all we can do is reach out to our good old Ulster hospitality and make sure every single one of them has a good time. You see somebody new, say hello to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it reflects on the organization when you see guys like, you know, Jeff Baum coming back here, you know, playing for the organization. You know, we had We had Mafuri on last week, again, played in the Friendship Four, a phenomenal player, and a guy who was able to come back and play for the organization. Of course, Darcy Murphy, who came back with aplomb and you know, picked up a title. And you know, it just shows what that has from our own organization, what we bring back. From your point of view, gents, put your neck on the block. Do you see? Sorry, go on, Dave. You want to say something?
I think Mace. There'd be other teams around the league have NCAA players that have came through the Friendship Four, but I think Mace has one over in Dundee this season. If I'm right, might not be, but there's definitely NCAA players that have played Friendship Four in Belfast and ended up in the Elite League. So, you know, it's an eye-opener for them that, you know, hockey exists for a start. I was talking to my big mate, Michael, I mentioned a few weeks ago, Michael Dobrovsky, former US Marine, who has been living in the UK for a while. Best kept secret, you know, again, didn't realize there was hockey here and now never misses a Giants webcast. So, you know, it's just converting people, as Robert's always telling us, we're his disciples, so we'll have to get out there and spread the good news of Belfast. And, you know, one way of doing that's whenever these visitors come this weekend and maybe people that are coming to the SSE for the first time and kids, there'll be a lot of kids there from schools and stuff that'll, it's their first experience of hockey. And, you know, what an absolute treat to come to the arena and see some of these teams that are going to be here.
Who's your pick then, gentlemen? Who out of the four? Quinnipiac. We've got UMass Lowell, UMass Amherst, and we've got Dartmouth Big Green. Who's your pick, Joel?
Well, UMass Lowell, the Riverhawks, were the winners of the inaugural Friendship Four. And as a Boston sports guy, apart from the Patriots, I'm going to have to hang my hat on probably UMass Lowell or Massachusetts. Let's go UMass Lowell to be the first, I think, to ring the bell twice.
Davey?
UMass Lowell.
UMass Lowell. UMass Lowell currently sitting, I think, the 14th or 15th with regards to national.
Yeah, I think they're probably not. Yeah, they're probably not favorites for the tournament.
I think they're standing fourth in the country with regards to their play, and I think they're coming in as strong favorites. And it'd be interesting to see. Obviously, they've got their game, as we said with Reid Cashman. There, he was a former captain for Quinnipiac, who's going up against not only a team that he helped coach, but a team that he also captained. And it'll be very interesting to see does he know their systems? Does he know how they play? Does he know what he's going up against there when Dartmouth play them? Is there going to be a real upset when Dartmouth play Quinnipiac in that first game? And then you've got the battle of University of Massachusetts between Lowell and Amherst. And it's going to be a fantastic weekend. Get yourself down there. It's going to be, I can't wait to get home. Can't wait to get home.
Paddy, that was very insightful. It's almost like you've spent the past week talking to all their coaches.
Coaches and captains, that's it. Reading how they've been going, telling you they were being beaten, that Quinnipiac will beat Princeton back-to-back, and then that UMass Amherst were able to beat the New Hampshire in that game on the way here and break a five-game losing streak. Who knew they were doing research into these things?
Yeah, I knew that. Who knew?
But yes, those games are. But and just to finish off, gentlemen, there are two Belfast Giants games this weekend, away to Guildford and away to Coventry. Guildford, Saturday at 6 p.m. in the Spectrum. You can get that on Williams TV. And Coventry away, 5:30 in the Sky Dome on Blaze TV. Davey, you mentioned earlier that we need to sort of step up and sort of get at the Guildford Flames.
What day?
Okay. Joel. And having got at the Guildford Flames, we need to get at the Coventry Blaze, Joel.
Yeah, look, the Blaze have been one of the surprise packages of the season so far. Danny Stewart's got a team that can cause upsets. They had 4 points last week, I believe. Beat the Flyers, beat the Stars. One game at a time, the first thing and the main thing I want to see this week is that we can finally stamp on over the Guildford Flames and try and hold that momentum a wee bit, but still an awful lot of hockey to play. It's a big, long road trip, and it's not easy to be on the road down bodies, so get what you can on the road, but I would love to see a win over Guildford this weekend.
Hear, hear. And on that note, gentlemen, any other business?
No. Longest podcast ever.
No. What do you find, David?
Close. First thing Friday morning.
Can't wait to see you, boys. Looking forward to it.
See you down the SSC. There might be a few bits and pieces going on over the weekend. Keep tuned to at Belfast Giants and at AVFTB and at Friendship_4 to see what's going on over the course of the weekend. The Belfast Giants games away to Guildford, 6 p.m. on Saturday down at the Spectrum in Surrey. That's also on Flames TV, and you could also get the Belfast Giants on 5:30 on Sunday, taking on the Coventry Blaze in the Sky Dome. Get that with Ed and Stu on Blaze TV. And of course, the Friendship 4 games, as I said, Friday, Dartmouth against Quinnipiac, 2 p.m. and UMass Lowell against UMass Amherst, 7 p.m. Third place game on Saturday, it's at 2 p.m. And then that Bell Pot final for the Templemore Avenue Bell, it's going to be at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Big thanks to Reid Cashman, Zach Metza, Greg Carville and Norm Bazin for their time and giving us interviews for the Friendship 4. Massive thanks to Lewis Hook for coming back and joining us for a bit of a chat. Big thanks to everybody out there who sent in your questions, your comments, your thoughts. And big thanks to you, Davey, and you, Joel.
Thanks, boys.
Welcome.
And wherever you are this weekend, be you at the Friendship 4, be you at the Guildford or Coventry games, be you at other less important games. We hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge. Podcast Network.